Spingola and Friends. It is Monday, August 4th, 2014. This is Deanna Spingola. This weekly radio program is not sponsored by anyone, and therefore it is for people who really can handle the truth. I do recommend that you visit my website, spingola.com. I just received a couple of weeks ago my supply of book 3 in both the hardcover and the paperback. It is the third book in the Ruling Elite series. Its title is The Ruling Elite, Death, Destruction, and Domination. There is a timeline of book 2 and book 3. It's a work in progress, and I hope that you will visit that link on my website. I pay the shipping cost on all books within the country, and the books are also available at Amazon, including the Kindle versions. Here I just said that it wasn't no commercials, but then I give you one. Oh, well. I would love to have you visit the website of a very, very dear person who has created and maintains the website. He uploads all the audio files from RBN, and he just does a wonderful job, and I so appreciate him. And that website is spingolaspeaks.wordpress.com. We will be taking questions later on in the program at 646-787-1915, and we will be taking questions and comments from the listeners via my email, comment@spingola.com, or from the chat room, spingola.chatango.com. My guest today is Eric Hunt. His website is gaschamberhoax.com. He is the creator of The Last Days of the Big Lie, The Jewish Gas Chamber Hoax, The Treblinka Archaeology Hoax, and he's got this wonderful virtual museum. He's just a wonderful, creative person, and I'm so happy to know him. His name is Eric Hunt. Eric, welcome to the program.
Wow, thanks for the introduction. That makes me feel great. Thanks, I appreciate it.
Oh, well, I appreciate all your work and all the sacrifices that you've made to do what you do. Oh, my gosh, it's just amazing. You've been through a lot because you've spoken the truth, and that is what happens when you speak the truth. People have a tendency to put an arrow on your back or a target on your back.
Yeah. So you said your book is subtitled Death, Destruction, and Domination, and we certainly see that happening in Gaza right now. I think our duty as revisionists is we're trying to get this information out to make sure Israel doesn't have this offensive shield called the Holocaust narrative to hide behind in their offensive genocide against the Palestinians. And as you know, we are all Palestinians because we're living under this domination. And so that's the message of revisionism, is to prevent this horror that's going on in the world.
Exactly. And it really is a horror. And it just breaks my heart when I see the pictures of these children, these Palestinian children who they are absolutely slaughtering. And they hardly mention that the slaughter that is taking place of the Palestinians in the mainstream media. It just breaks my heart. I'm so upset over what is going on.
Well, I mean, they're saying it's, what, 1,200? The death toll is about 1,200 people now?
Yes.
Is it?
Just in this recent conflict. I mean, we're talking many, many thousands if you count forward from 1948 and before.
So, I mean, think about the death and destruction on 9/11 and how our country reacted to this. How can people not care about these predominantly women and children? The death toll is over half of 9/11 right now. I don't see it going on for much longer. I think a lot of people are starting to become more courageous, speaking out against Zionism. Even celebrities now, it's going to be cool to be for the Palestinians for freedom. So there's certainly some hope. There's some hope about our message getting to people when they lose the fear of their minds even going in a direction we need to take them. They need to understand that Jews are not angels, Germans are not demons, vice versa with the Palestinian-Israeli situation. So things like this, they vindicate us for sure, and the statements of these people are blatant now. They're bragging about shelling these schools and openly calling for genocide. I read some members of the Israeli parliament are doing this. It's you know, for so long we're trying to tell people that this is their sort of secret agenda. This is what they really want to do, and now they're just doing it. They're targeting UN, United Nations schools where women and children are hiding, and blowing it up because they think no one will stand up to them. Everyone is afraid of being called anti-Semitic. They have this Holocaust narrative that makes them think they can get away with murder. So I believe that focusing on exposing this Holocaust narrative as largely untrue, it's developed into a modern religious myth, is central to preventing the horrors we're seeing today.
Oh, exactly. And I cover quite a lot of the history of the Holocaust and the numbers and the census schedules, population movements, and everything in my third book. And I'm sure it's going to put another target on my back because I do talk about it. And but that's what we all have to do. And it certainly is a myth, and it's one that I believed. I felt so sympathetic and so much
yes.
sympathy initially years ago when
Me
I
too.
Was growing up. Because I always, you know, I have a very tender heart. And if somebody tells me a story about mass murder and torture and terrible things, I'm obviously going to feel sympathetic. And that is what most people do, is they feel sympathetic when they hear these stories. But if you evaluate them, as you have, then you begin, and if you look at the numbers and realize that there were more Jewish people after World War II than there were before, and less of everyone else, you think, wait a minute, gosh, there were 50 million people killed in World War II. And,
I mean,
well,
the thing is, Jürgen Graf estimates that approximately 1 million Jews died as a result of Nazi persecution. This is a great number. It's, of course, but what was the civilian death of the Chinese? What was the civilian death of the Japanese? What was the civilian death of the Germans? Then we start seeing things in appropriate terms, which is that all of this violence, all of this destruction, one isn't equal, one isn't better than another one.
Of course.
So without these gas chambers, it's got the shower rooms and the 6 million, the suffering and death and even murder of Jews, they would not be getting away with murder today with their real targeted atrocities against women and children.
Right.
They tell us a bunch of fake horror stories about the Germans, you know, such as Elie Wiesel talking about dump trucks full of babies being dumped into flaming pits of fire at the entrance of Auschwitz. When I was a school child, I was reading this book. Of course, I'm horrified. I'm thinking, wow, I'm glad America put a stop to this. But
sure.
then you find out it's not true, and these people, that Nobel Peace Prize winner, is using this to continue war. It's so we're seeing real atrocities against babies and children, innocent people today, because these lies about babies. And I just read a horror story about a pregnant woman at Treblinka. You know, they're fiction that is used to create murder today, to get away with murder today. Genocide, some say.
Exactly. And yes, I read those stories too. And there's one, I think it's central to establishing a new world order. The Holocaust was central, and that's what some writers say, that that this was planned kind of before World War II even started. In fact, they tried to use it to exploit this Holocaust myth in World War I, and it didn't fly. And the enemy was still the same. The Germans were viciously vilified, and they were supposedly the people that started World War I, and that isn't true either. And so they needed to focus on this awful enemy, the supposed enemy, and make a whole nation the poster child for evil. And of course, we do know that they have the support. The Israelis have the entire support of the U.S. Congress.
Uh-huh.
And go ahead.
I think that's changing. I think everyone is horrified. I don't think there's, especially because of the internet now. I think they're going to find it harder to justify, you know, mainly soldiers dying on the Israeli side and almost entirely civilians dying on the other side. I think it. You know, Americans, they're pretty dumb and brainwashed, but they know to root for the underdog, and I don't think they like what's happening entirely. How long can they just call these people terrorists when they're just children?
They're kids throwing rocks.
Well, the people that are getting blown up now are hiding in UN-designated zones and hospitals. Are those terrorists? You know,
exactly.
So the UN, I was pleased, I forget the name for the head of the UN. He's really speaking out. He knows there's no excuse for this. He knows it was targeted.
But speaking out and then actually taking action are two entirely different things. And it's very easy to speak out about something when you are the head of the UN, but then they have the Security Council and the people who vote. And while he can say something about it, does that mean that the U.S. is going to then vote against Israel? I don't think so. I don't see that happening. Otherwise, why hasn't it happened? If something like this were happening anywhere else, if there was a country that had gone in and started bombing children, bombing schools,
yes,
bombing U.S.-sanctioned, UN-sanctioned safe zones, we
yes
would be in there with all the might of the U.S. military doing
absolutely
something about it.
Yeah, imagine if Russia was doing that, Americans, if they were doing that in Ukraine. I'm sure there would be a multinational, I mean, you could call it whatever you want, but
exactly.
So the aim of revisionism is to take away this offensive shield that Israel and Judaism is using against the entire world. We're doing a lot of interesting things. We set up a website called Holocaust Hoax Museum.
I love that museum.
Yeah,
I mean, I just really love it.
Well, we're not ready yet.
I know.
It's more of a concept that we're hoping people will support. I'm trying to make a video with some really mainstream, semi-professional production values. We want to use 3D backgrounds. We want to shoot on a green screen. We want to raise the production values of revisionist videos, and we're hoping to basically do a virtual museum tour. So people will learn about the soap and the lampshades and the shrunken human heads. They will learn about the torture of captured Germans and who are tortured to sign confessions. And they're going to learn about real execution gas chambers in the United States and how the alleged homicidal gas chambers in the German concentration camps had none of the features that these actual homicidal gas chambers in America did and still do.
Exactly.
So we're going to try to make the best sort of beginner tutorial to the subject, and it's just going to, we're trying to make something we can show everyone. It's not going to be too controversial. It's just going to try to lay out the revisionist method, message that's been developing over not exactly 70 years, but almost. Mm-hmm. And, so that's one of the projects I'm working on. It's that we're hoping people can support it. We're going to need some more equipment to get this done. Like I said, we're trying to shoot on green screens and try to make entire 3D backgrounds and exhibits. So we're trying to make something modern and sort of interesting, possibly a little bit of a comedy to sort of educate and entertain people and try to get them to understand us. I think a lot of our information, I know it's a difficult subject and people are afraid to approach it because
sure.
it's like looking at death itself.
Sure.
It's like I said, there are approximately a million Jürgen Graf claims that died in these camps and under German control, not only in the camps, but under German control.
Sure.
Due to persecution. So we're trying to make something approachable. Mostly approachable. They say almost, I don't know how to say it, I don't want to insult, but a lot of our material it seems to the newcomer to be quite scary, and some websites and videos even possibly scare people away from our message and our truth. And
sure.
I think it's important for us to try to make something approachable, and that's the goal of this virtual museum tour.
And I just love the idea. I love the way that it initially looks, and people can see that at gaschamberhoax.com/blog. I just love the feel that you've already developed in this. We do have a caller.
Okay, great.
It's kind of early to take calls, but why don't we take a caller? Let's see, that's 603. Let me make it live. Okay, caller at 603.
Hello?
Hello? Yes, hello.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yes, go ahead.
Okay, I have a question. Sorry for calling so early. I didn't know what the...
No, that's okay.
My question is, in America, why are we so indoctrinated with the Holocaust when it didn't even happen here?
Yeah, well, the reason is because all the Holocaust survivors, most of them came to America.
Okay.
So
I think, grasping the influence of Hollywood. Is that accurate?
Yes.
That it's this brainwashing, and if you question it, people think you're insane.
Yeah, it's emotional. I mean, in my movie, The Last Days of the Big Lie, I totally debunk an Oscar-winning Steven Spielberg documentary from 1999 And what they do, you know, Steven Spielberg is a master of emotional manipulation in all of his movies, Saving Private Ryan especially. In this movie, he's got violins playing as this old, somewhat sympathetic-looking grandmother is telling us, you know, the Nazis forced her to defecate diamonds for a year and a half, and people believe in it. They believe in it because of emotional manipulation, also combined with the stigma of questioning such things, you know. How could you call that woman a liar? Well,
yeah,
there's many reasons.
And I'd like to add something real quick. I need to emphasize that I'm not a religious person. I don't feel the need to hide behind any political or religious affiliation. But that whole chosen people, I was intrigued by that, and I was speaking to somebody who was a religious fanatic, and I realized, again, it's the hiding. But that interpretation is designed to confuse. That whole thing about them being appointed as the chosen people, it's not because God preferred them. They were appointed to spread the message of his existence, but ultimately they led him to his death after he exposed what they were doing with the money. The parallels between Hitler and Jesus are striking, and they ultimately were killed by the same group of people.
I came to Holocaust revisionism by also looking at Christianity. I read the Bible and I see it as a work of fiction, Jewish fiction. So I see parallels between stories like the Exodus and the Holocaust. So I can't agree with you, sir, about what you entirely said, but I think the story of Jesus, it is sort of clear he's trying to fight against the aspect of Judaism that we are trying to fight against. So in that respect, I appreciate that.
Go ahead.
Sorry. And they pretty much wrote the Bible, if I'm not mistaken. And it's funny how Hitler is so demonized, you know, the notion of, oh, he wanted to take over the world. But it looks like in his quest to curb communism and take over the world, where he failed, America succeeded.
Well, I mean, as far as myself, I was always confused when I was young when I saw Franklin Delano Roosevelt, Winston Churchill sitting next to Joseph Stalin. So I don't think the people of the Baltic countries or Finland see World War II as black and white as Americans do. And without the gas chamber fantasy and the 6 million propaganda figure, then World War II becomes quite a different thing. And it's a fratricidal war, essentially, that primarily Europeans were the victims of, not Jews.
Yep.
How true, yes. And, you know, it's very interesting, too, if you ask why it was such a big deal here, is that Jimmy Carter, President Jimmy Carter, on November 1st, 1978, actually issued an executive order, Order 12093, and then appointed Elie Wiesel as the chairman of a newly created 34-member commission on the Holocaust. So they began operations early the following year to establish a Holocaust museum. And then thereafter, they created all of this, I guess you could call it propaganda. But
religion.
But teaching tools, yes, that they could implement in every single school district in the country where children are told, brainwashed into believing this myth. And so that is why there's such a prevalence of Holocaust believability here in this country, is because it's part of the educational system, part of Hollywood, part of the government, because the same commission that was serving then is still in force. There's still a commission, and some of the people on the commission are members of Congress. So it's the government, or the people, actually donated public land for this museum. Public land.
Well, this is unconstitutional. It's the establishment of a religion.
It is.
This is the federal establishment of a religion. Unfortunately, we don't have resources to actually take this to the Supreme Court, show revisionist information,
You seem to be fading out.
I apologize. It's the establishment, the federal establishment of a religion. There is no separation of synagogue and state. I was brought to the Holocaust Museum, I believe twice, possibly even three times before I even turned 18. I was brought there with school and school groups. I was brought there with the Boy Scouts. It's a brainwashing factory.
Oh my God! Yes,
it's terrible.
Lastly, I'm sorry. It seems like about a year ago, if you were to tell me that Adolf Hitler wasn't evil and the Holocaust didn't happen, I would think you were insane. Delve into it objectively, and it just, anybody with any sort of common sense, it just does not make sense, the lies we have accepted.
Well, here's the thing. Evil is just what people call their enemies. Me, I'm not a terrible fan of Hitler. I think his militarism led us to the situation the West is in now. So you don't have to view people in evil or good terms. I think that's one of the false things that the quote Holocaust story has brought up. You can't really call Putin evil, or you just got to see that different people have different motivations, and you should understand their motivations if you want to prevent things like what's happening today from happening. I'm sorry. That's what I wanted to say.
Yes. So I'm not sure what is happening with your audio. It sounds like there's...
I think he's in a NASCAR race or something.
Oh, no, I'm sorry. I'm trying to get better reception. I'm outside. I wasn't aware that it was my phone that was sporadic. I'm not on NASCAR, right? That's not until next month. But
All right.
And lastly, any time that I try to defend Hitler, saying that he's demonized unjustly, I get the backlash of, oh, haven't you read Mein Kampf? Although the answer is no, in that book he never, not once, called for the murder of Jews. He wanted them of the country. That's it.
Well, out of Europe, essentially, is the plan. That was the final solution, was transporting them out of Europe and making sure they wouldn't come back, essentially.
Bringing them to Madagascar so they cannot manipulate banking.
Right.
Well, Madagascar would have been a better choice than current Palestine. That's for sure.
Sure. Well, thank you so much, 603, for calling in. We're gonna We're gonna let you get back to whatever it is you're doing.
Okay. Thank you.
Thanks.
Thanks. Thank you.
Bye. Okay. That was weird background music or whatever. It's different.
Oh, it was interesting.
Well, anyway, go ahead.
Oh, sorry. You could continue.
Well, you were. There's been some interesting things occur just in the last couple of weeks that kind of involve you. And of course, since David Cole was revealed that his name is that he's going under an assumed name. There's been a lot of discussion about whether he is good and worthy, or whether he isn't, or whose side is he on? What's he doing now? What has he been doing all of these years after he kind of disappeared? In fact, I actually referred to him in my third book, some of the statements he made to Zundel, Ernst Zundel, and because he interviewed him way back, and it was kind of interesting. But anyway, so what is going on? He's not been very kind to you.
I don't think he necessarily said anything too unkind to me yet. He saw my film, my documentary, The Treblinka Archaeology Hoax, and because many people have watched this video and they really like it, and they're trying to share it with him to see if he would be interested in seeing more information from the revisionist side. He took issue with one small, basically 10-second segment in the first draft of the film, and spent about 6 paragraphs debunking this, which was already, this mistake was already changed less than 2 days later once it was noticed. So he hasn't really actually responded to my video or the revisionist movement's work on Treblinka. He believes that 900,000 were gassed at Treblinka. He believes in these so-called Reinhard camps, where almost 2 million were gassed in gas chambers disguised as shower rooms. I have a really sort of comprehensive reply to David Cole, trying to get him to stop. He hasn't replied to anything I really made, any points I made in the video. I laid it out very easily for him. You can check out my reply to David Cole. It's on HolocaustHoaxMuseum.com. And I think it's a very good supplement to the video. So please, David Cole, would you do the scholarly thing and try to reply to my points about the requirements of the massive mass graves, which would be required to bury 900,000 people. These massive mass graves do not show up on the ground penetrating radar survey that was recently done at Treblinka. Coles has not replied to any of that information. He hasn't replied to any of the video evidence, testimonials actually, of Jews who describe being transited through this alleged pure extermination camp. So, David Cole wants to call me a liar or uninformed because of one small mistake in a sort of complex project that I wanted to rush out there, but he hasn't replied to any of my my strongest points. He wants to talk about a mistake that's already been corrected. Come on, David, that's just lazy.
Sure.
You can, but that's about that. On that issue.
Sure. Well, he actually said to Ernst Zundel, he said Zionism had a negative effect as earlier Jews assimilated, as opposed to the Russian Jews, who came later with all of their customs and traditional clothing. Many Jews did not favor taking over Palestine or moving to a desert where there was a war going on and leaving the relative comforts that they were accustomed to, but the Zionists took over the public dialogue. He also said, but it was the Holocaust, the bludgeoning with the Holocaust. We have to have this or the Holocaust will happen again. We have to get out of Europe because Europe only wants to kill us. It was the Holocaust that made most of the anti-Zionist Jews rethink their position and give way towards Zionism. And he said, the Holocaust story provides self-definition and is even more important now than the Torah. For secularized Jews, the Holocaust became far more important and a defining factor in one's Judaism, a story of persecution, hatred of Nazis, hatred of Germans, and hatred of anti-Semites. Those characteristics are what makes a Jew. He went on to say that because people cannot always define Jews by their physical features, he said, and I quote, Jews need Jew haters to define them, so they create anti-Semites. They love having lists of anti-Semites because these anti-Semites allow them to have the definition of being separate and a Jew without a Jew, and a Jew without a Jew hater is nothing. Jews need their anti-Semitism, which is why Jews invest so much in fighting anti-Semitism and calling attention to anti-Semitism in literally anything, any criticism of Israel or Israeli policies or criticism of what Jews might be doing will be labeled as anti-Semitism or Jew hatred because Jews flourish from pointing to what they call Jew haters and anti-Semitism. And he said it's more about fundraising than about anything else.
Well, yes, it was from the start, but it's not only that. If you Jews, they want to make you equivalent to someone throwing a baby into a fire. That's what they want to do with that. I mean, that's just the honest way I see it. So that's that. Recently, the Treblinka archaeology hoax video was pulled from YouTube. This was only 3 days after my response to David Cole, the Treblinka archaeology hoax. There was a supposed copyright violation from the company which filmed the original documentary that I was debunking. I'm fighting this. My documentary is covered under fair use. Documentaries such as this, all right, the subject is controversial, but documentaries such as mine, which analyze, dissect, and are used for education and scholarship or the complete reason why fair use laws were created and are sort of required of a free society. So I'm willing to go to court over this if they're really going to try, but I believe it's a scare tactic. A lot of these big companies, they have other sort of smaller law firms or that they go to send these threatening letters out to sites like YouTube, but they don't actually have the desire or ability to actually go to court over this. And I don't think they even know that they don't have a case against copyright violation. I think they just
Throw it out there to see if you'll if it'll stick. They throw it against the wall to see if it'll stick. Yeah.
Yeah, but YouTube can do what they want, I guess. But I'm appealing what their decision was. The other company has to reply. This is what archaeologist Caroline Sturdy Coles, this is the result of her refusal to even answer anyone's emails that want to ask her a question or sort of just participate in a scholarly dialogue. She canceled an appearance. She was going to speak at a synagogue, and another website was trying to get people to go there and ask her questions and film the Q&A session, you could say. And she canceled the speech because she, whatever reason she wants to claim. The problem is she is not engaging in a dialogue with anyone that is that just wants to ask her a question. I mean, it's and as a result of this sort of Deborah Lipstadt initiated policy, they think they can just ignore us, remove our videos that expose them, you know, but I think people are sort of catching on that the story we're told about Treblinka and the greater Holocaust, it doesn't hold up, and in many ways it's a mirror image of what actually happened. In my documentary, Caroline Sturdy Cole, she's a British archaeologist. She claimed to have proven that Treblinka was this factory of death, let's say. But my documentary basically uncovers that it's a total show. It's a myth being created before our very eyes. Anyway, she went to Majdanek, and she's in the bath and disinfection complex. This is the place where inmates were showered and de-loused before, at the very entrance of the concentration camp. And today they're claimed that inmates were gassed in these rooms that were used for de-lousing clothing to keep them alive. So we're told that the Germans killed people in a bath and disinfection complex designed to keep them alive. So this is a mirror image of reality that these people are spreading to millions of people, and they refuse to engage with anyone with an opposing view.
It kind of makes me wonder, I'm sure other people wonder also, David Cole did go to Auschwitz. He wore a yarmulke. He interviewed the people there and really exposed the fact that the so-called gas chamber there was in fact not a gas chamber at all. And he did a wonderful job, and people really appreciated this. And now he's coming back as if he's and really promoting the official version of the Holocaust. So it just kind of makes you wonder, did he do this initial portrayal of an honest truth seeker just to repudiate it, just to plan to repudiate it later, or did he get scared? Did he become converted to the official version? I'm not sure. I can't imagine him being so scholarly at that point in time.
Yeah.
And then you made the correction within 2 days back in May. Mm-hmm. Based on because Guillermo Rudolph had mentioned, hey, you know, this is wrong, so you came out with an amended version on May 15th, and now he doesn't answer you, and it's been quite a while.
I would assume
that he would know about your response.
I'm sure he does, but I think like his original reply, which in my opinion was lazy to just, you know, call me a liar, I think that's lazy, David. And, you know, I spent 4 days on a reply trying to even create a lot of new imagery to try and explain my point of view. And this guy uses Simpsons references and it's sort of like a childish thing to do. And also lazy, in my opinion, because to say that I would go through all that I've gone through, all this sort of suffering and things, to lie is absurd. And he should know better, having been on the opposite side himself, being called a liar for what he did at Auschwitz and Majdanek. He should reply, but I don't take much stock or hope in him. I was very sort of confused when I heard from other revisionists that he was secretly making actually pro-Holocaust movies in Hollywood and was partying in Republican sort of neoconservative circles. I'm not really happy with the developments as far as him and sort of tricking revisionists, you could say. And I think, in my opinion, he brags about it in his book that he was playing both sides.
Yeah.
You know, that's for him to live with. A lot of us in this so-called movement, we're looking to him as someone we could point to say that, you know, we don't hate all Jews. Look at this guy. He's actually trying to work for peace and sort of work with Gentiles. And he was a sort of young guy, so other people had a lot of hope in him. But now, thanks to him, a lot of that is gone.
And that's why I question whether this was all really kind of set up. I mean, they don't, a lot of the plans that they put into place take a few years. They don't just immediately happen. And,
I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
But David Irving and also Mark Weber hold similar views, which we consider are due to, we're under duress. I mean, David Irving especially, he can't really say anything pro-revisionist because he's taking tours to Poland and the sites, and he was in prison in Austria for a year and a half for a speech he gave 16 years prior. So, all right, Mr. Irving has a bit of an excuse for why he says some things that aren't true. He says that people were massively machine gunned into pits at Treblinka. He has no evidence for this, and I don't believe he actually believes it. It's just something he sort of says, wink, wink. You know, he has this sort of position. But David Cole, I liken it to Richard Dawkins becoming a Mormon. I just don't see anyone going back to the other side after you learn that these... You learn about Zyklon B being used as insecticide. You learn about delousing process and how this was confused and how it was sort of frightening. There's no way back for us. And it's sort of as simple as that. I mean,
sure.
He must have seen, I believe he was also at Majdanek. I'm pretty sure I remember some footage of him at Majdanek. He must have seen the canisters that had written on them carbon dioxide. You know, these are bottles that are used for things in everyday life, many industrial uses for carbon dioxide bottles, including carbonating beverages. He knows that they are not the carbon monoxide bottles that are claimed, which really only have one use, murder. So I don't understand how David Cole can see that Auschwitz and Majdanek are basically atrocity propaganda lies, but all these other camps, such as Treblinka, Belzec, Sobibor, and Kelno, were these pure extermination camps. I mean, revisionism is basically its gas chamber, showing that there were no homicidal gas chambers. The only such gas chambers in the camps were delousing chambers. And that's everywhere where we don't have these, they were here, they were there. There were no gas chambers disguised as shower rooms to trick almost 3 million Jews into their deaths. So some people have said that David Cole is not a revisionist, and that's with a capital R. And I'd also say that revisionists don't say half of the camps had gas chambers disguised as shower rooms. It's absurd when you see the intact, bath and disinfection facility at Majdanek, how you can ever say that, you know, and seeing the huge reduction in death, in the death toll there, you know, the original Soviet propaganda number was 1.5 million that were killed in Majdanek. Now it's a little over 50,000. So we're going to see a reduction in that magnitude of Treblinka and these alleged Operation Reinhardt camps in our lifetime. You know, that was a 30-fold reduction in Majdanek. Well, when there's something similar at Treblinka, Belzec, and Sobibor, as well as Auschwitz, revisionism will have totally won. And I don't think it's that hard to get to an official reduction in the deaths at Treblinka. And a lot of us are really focusing on the Treblinka story because that's what the other side is doing right now. They think they can make these propaganda documentaries and trick us into thinking that there's serious science and archaeology behind the claim that 900,000 are buried under the ground at Treblinka. And that's just not true.
Right. Well, this article that you've done, your response to him is just very scholarly. It's just amazing. And even though he has not responded, just the work that you've put into it is typical of what you do. Everything that you do is very scholarly. And this will stand. This is a record. You are on record as responding to him. And he is, hasn't responded.
Well, yeah, I mean, Mr. Luchter, you know, David Cole is now insulted. He's just been going sort of wild and insulting Fred Leuchter, Robert Farrison, and Bradley Smith. So he's sort of on the outs of the revisionist community now.
Sure.
He got their money from his book, so I guess that's that.
Wow. Well, the fact that he hasn't responded is commentary on where his objectives are, and I think we know what they are.
Well, here's the thing. If you look at some of the imagery on my response to David Cole, for instance, on the CODO forums, Committee for Open Debate on the Holocaust.
I love that site. It's just
yes,
a
it's
wonderful
awesome.
Site.
On the forums there's a man who he posts under the name Hanover. He pointed out that 900,000, well, that's the Los Angeles Coliseum holds 90,000 people at full capacity.
Yes.
So I made an image to explain to David, well, I put in three dimensions, sort of 2.5D, I put 10 of these stadiums on top of each other,
mm-hmm.
on top of the existing Treblinka ground, and that's how many human remains you'd have to have at this site. So if you, maybe I'm just trying to keep a little bit of an open mind for David to maybe he just, I think if you don't actually visualize things, some people are visual learners, I think you can just jump to the wrong conclusions. David wants to use some code words, he claims, in German documents to mean that this is actually a true event, but I think if you actually visualize it and analyze the actual ground-penetrating radar data that's been taken and is actually used in the television program, then you find out that the story you think is somewhat plausible is actually impossible.
Exactly.
You can't. They're just not there. Is what the GP ground penetrating radar scan taken by Coles herself seems to show. That's what it seems to show right now, as far as what we've been shown. She has yet to publish or respond to any peer reviews, we'll see what she comes up with.
Indeed. Well, this is certainly an excellent response, and just I love the fact that you included the diagram that you just mentioned, as well as other photos, because as you just said, a lot of people are visual learners. I think about 75% of the population learn visually, and that is why it's so important that you continue to make videos.
Yes.
Because more people will look at a video and look at photos, then they will read a book. And so I think this is very important that you continue this work, and that's why it's also important that you acquire the help that you need for the museum, the Holocaust Hoax Museum. And it is just holocausthoaxmuseum.com. And I think it's a wonderful, wonderful idea, because not everyone is going to go to the, I think there's one in, I don't know, Houston, and there's one in, there's several all over. I don't know the exact number. Even if you look at Wikipedia, you'll find that there's a whole bunch of museums right here in this country, and they are taxpayer funded for the most part.
Yeah. So we're trying. It's going to be just virtual for the start. We're going to try and create a little video that sort of shows the potential of the idea, and possibly today it might be able to reach more people just over the internet than that would actually go to a physical museum. So it's not a bad start, but we will one day have a museum and monuments to honor some of the great revisionist heroes, Germar Rudolf, Mr. Luxor.
Yes.
A lot of people are still sort of focusing on the domination. Of course, we're in a bad situation right now, but we have to imagine where we want to be, and we want to cut federal funding to this hate museum that spreads blood libels against the Germans. That's one goal that we should be trying to focus on.
Indeed.
And after, and even one day we're going to need some sort of an actual facility, physical place where people can learn how atrocity propaganda supports real atrocities today, like what we're seeing in Gaza.
True.
Yeah.
Well, maybe we could approach President Obama and get him to create an executive order and give us some public land, maybe in Washington, where we can create and the money to build a museum that shows the opposite view. And then maybe we could have the same kind of funding and support to create educational materials that we could then share with all the schools in the country. How about that? How about doing something like that and have it all be taxpayer funded?
Well, yeah. Unfortunately, we're not going to get the government support that you speak of.
I'm being facetious.
I understand. However, there are many German Americans that listen to you that have seen this sort of myth used against their people as a racist blood libel. I am trying to show that I'm trying to build something. I'm working with many other revisionists. HolocaustHandbooks.com, which is run by Germar Rudolf, is trying. They are trying to sponsor this next video. All of my videos have been improving in production values. We don't really have a much organization today in the revisionist movement. A lot of it happened due to the problems with the IHR and the current guy who's running it. But we're trying to sort of reach out, especially to the internet generation, with some somewhat professional videos and graphics and imagery. And we're trying to really break it down to people in a modern way. I think people are not going to read, Arthur Butz's book today, just the average person. It's great and a seminal classic, but I think even Mr. Butz would say that today we've got to make videos, we've got to use imagery, we've got to, reach the modern audience. And we're an organization that's doing that. I have other people working with me here and there that are really, really trying to start from nothing. I think you know about this. We're not just going to take over the existing media. We're going to have to create our own media from nothing.
Sure.
So, you know, I started a few years ago with literally nothing. I would make the videos I would record into a phone to record them. And if you like my videos, if you appreciate it, if you want to see better videos,
send some money.
Press
that donation button.
We believe that just shining a light on these people on this subject is all that we really need to do. I think we're trying to show that we see a way forward. We're trying to do more than almost anyone else out there. We need to improve our production values. We need to purchase better equipment. We want to make more videos. We want to travel to different sites and try to show these to people. So basically, yes, we need some help with funding our documentary production. It's really that's about all it is. We have a lot of talent in the community. I think my projects like the Treblinka Archaeology Hoax and The Last Days of the Big Lie show that the other side, they just have more money. It's not like they have the truth on their side, or they just have more money for slicker presentations to manipulate people.
Sure.
We don't desire to do this. We just want to make our presentations sort of clean, approachable, and professional looking. So we could use your help.
Sure. Now, there are a lot of people that work with you. Do you want to name any of them?
So recently, Garamar Rudolph, he runs HolocaustHandbooks.com, and we'd all appreciate it if you're interested in buying physical copies of books to visit that website, HolocaustHandbooks.com. He's given some funding to support our projects as far as specifically to make a video advertising the Don Hedesheimer book, The First Holocaust.
Yes. That would be a wonderful, wonderful video, wouldn't it?
Well, what we're trying to do is actually make this into this larger museum tour video.
Okay.
So if you look on our website, we've got sort of a mock-up of this room, which will explain that this 6 million number was used decades before World War II. It was spread originally by Zionist people in the Zionist movement. And this is the subject of the book, The First Holocaust. So
right. We're
working with them at HolocaustHandbooks.com. Friedrich Paul Berg of NaziGassings.com. He's a Columbia-educated engineer who has exposed the diesel gassing. I don't know exactly how to say myth. It's just an incredible, inefficient way to kill people that didn't happen. It seems the other side is even starting to reluctantly admit this.
Sure. He does some marvelous work, absolutely marvelous work. His website has all sorts of resources on it. Excuse me. And anyway, yeah. Anybody that gets kicked off of certain radio stations and are not allowed to be a guest on a radio program on certain stations, you know that they're telling the truth.
Yes, I agree. Also, there's some behind the scenes people that are really unsung heroes of this. I was able to go to Treblinka because of the financial help of a man who's helping to support this research, try to give some movement into this movement. So I can't really reveal him.
No,
his
I don't
name
want
or anything.
That.
But and then there's other people who are helping with research behind the scenes as well. I believe the website's holahoax101.org. One second, let me get it actually. Yes, that's it, holahoax101.org. He's been helping with research behind the scenes. He's been the webmaster there, holahoax101.org. So we're trying to just create somewhat of a production company, you could say. I think if we're able to complete this next video, which we're hoping to incorporate some somewhat photorealistic 3D and green screen, I think people will see even more of what the potential is here for sort of supporting us and funding us.
Sure. Now, what about, I believe that Don Hedesheimer might still be alive. Have you talked with him at all?
I believe he is still today.
I've tried to email him, but never received a response.
And there's been some other great work done on the same subject since then, about the 6 million figure appearing in many different countries before World War II. Originally, it was about Russia, It was originally a Zionist fundraising.
Right. Yeah.
And it was used also during World War I. It has no basis in reality. Essentially, it's a part of the religious myth that we know today to be the Holocaust.
Sure. Oh, that's great. All righty. As I mentioned before, anyone can call in with a question at 646-787-19. No, is that the number? 1915? Hang on, just let me look the number here. Is that the number? Yeah, that is. 646-787-1915. Just call in with your questions or comments. And, of course, I'm monitoring somewhat. I'm monitoring the chat room to see if there are any questions. There's some, some wonderful comments. One person said that 6 million was spewed from about 1897 onwards and from various places. And of course, it started after Theodore Herzl published his book. And of course, the whole Zionist movement began in the late 1800s, and it took a while for it to really get its speed up. But this is the consequences. We are living the consequences of what was done over 100 years ago towards this objective.
Exactly. It's horrible, but I mean, Holocaust revisionists have foreseen this. Anyone who we could accuse of being behind such a seemingly what a despicable evil thing to do is to hoist this blood libel upon the Germans. A bath and disinfection building was used to murder people. Are you kidding me? They'd have to be some pretty hateful people.
Yes.
And we're seeing the result of this genocidal hatred for non-Jews in Gaza, which is the same sort of spirit that gets away with this stuff like we've seen in these bogus Holocaust documentaries and Judaism is Jewish supremacism. I'm a believer that all religion needs to go, but Judaism specifically is the belief that Jews are God's chosen people, that they're mm-hmm. better than other people, and that's why they have no remorse after targeting women and children hiding from their killing.
Right.
So it says, yeah, sorry.
No, go ahead.
Finally, I think it's becoming more obvious to people. You know, we've said for years that they're doing some horrible things behind the scenes, but we're told that we're conspiracy theorists and all this. If we look a few years back, we see what happened in New Jersey with the rabbis who were harvesting organs. We see them just, you know, murdering, using this is state-sponsored terrorism. You know, they call the Palestinians terrorists, but they're just low-budget freedom fighters, you could say. The state of Israel is just they're high budget terrorists.
Exactly. You made a statement earlier on about the fact that that the people who are dying in Palestine are actually civilians and citizens, and that the people who are dying in Israel are the army, the military. Well, the fact is that the Palestinians really don't have what you would call a military force.
Uh-huh.
Whatever force that they do have is certainly does not have the equipment, the rockets and all of the equipment that the U.S. Government supplies to Israel. And it just makes me ill to think that my tax dollars are going to fund this genocide. It's just terrible. And people in America need to wake up and notify the government, the Jewish-led Congress, that we're tired of this. We're tired of the genocide.
Mm-hmm.
And you can always tell, really, which side is really in the wrong by the number of people that are dead. After World War II, when you count up the dead and you look at the destruction in the territory, the countries, look at the destruction that was perpetrated in Germany, the destruction that was perpetrated in Japan. I mean, they were bombing every city in Germany first that had over 50,000 people. And then they decided to go ahead and bomb just about any other city so that all you had was a pile of rubble at the end of the war. And that is exactly what you have in going on now in the Middle East. Palestine is a pile of rubble. That is what it is. And what's happening in Israel? Well, I don't know. Maybe a few soldiers are killed, but Palestine is a pile of rubble, and blood is running in the street, and little kids are dying.
Yes, I mean, I think, you know, as horrible as it is to say, this is a wake-up call. I think some people are answering the call. You know, there's only so much they can hide behind this Holocaust. There's only so much they can call people anti-Semites. So I'd say to your listeners also, lose the fear. You don't have to go into the Holocaust or anything, but say to your friends or someone you know that has similar politics, say, hey, I think what they're doing to those children and women in Gaza are terrible.
Exactly.
You know, if they're listening to Rush Limbaugh or Sean Hannity or something, they might be into, or some of the stuff David Cole may like. They might hear the neoconservative line that, you know, Israel. Let's think of all the cliche lines. Israel is the only democracy in the Middle East. They're our only ally. What else? Talk to your friends about this. Try to get them to think about this, because I remember there was a time I used to listen to some of these neoconservatives, and especially after 9/11,
sure.
you almost think they have a point. Of course, you know, but Yeah, I think everyone should be trying to support Palestine and their fight for freedom from this crazed, lying, murdering aggressor.
Yes. We do have a caller. Let's from 304, caller in 304. Hang on, I got a light.
West Virginia.
Okay, you're
yeah, hi,
okay.
Deanna.
Who is it again? Ken?
Yeah, this is Ken from West Virginia.
Okay.
Yeah, and well, first of all, of course, now that thanks to little Georgie Bush, you're right. There's another democracy in the Middle East, Iraq. I mean, he spread them. So there you go. They shot their arguments down there, didn't they? They can't claim
yeah.
they're their only democracy.
You're right.
Well,
and
go ahead. Egypt, several states in the region are now. I mean,
That's a good point,
and,
Dan.
Yeah, and I just sent you a link, Deanna, that currently the population, the Jewish population of Israel is just a little bit over 6 million. So, you know, their fixation on that number, you know, if they keep pushing their luck, there's always a possibility that their wish could come true. You know, I'm just being facetious, you know. But, you know, the Christian Zionists talk about there's supposed to be this Armageddon where there's this huge war in Israel. Isn't that what it's all about, that all the Jews die and then get converted or something or other? I don't know what it's all, you know,
sure.
I'm not up on that. But I it's just odd that there's 6 million Jews now in Israel. So if the Armageddon would happen, well, then the Holocaust would finally come true for them, you know. So
sure.
It's
now,
just
did
a
you,
little
where
curiosity.
Did you send that, where did you send that link
sent,
to? Comment at Spingola.com?
Oh, I sent it to Deanna. Where is it?
Okay. I won't see that until after the program. Could you resend it to comment@spingola.com?
Okay. Comment. Yeah.
Comment@spingola.com. Because I never look at the other email address during the program.
Okay. Let's see.
Well, I mean, David McAlden theorized that what the Jews are saying about this, quote, Holocaust and extermination program is their projection of their desire to exterminate Gentiles. That was his opinion on the subject. And today, seeing what's happening in Gaza, there's actually some op-ed pieces being written in favor of actual genocide of the Gazans by Israelis. It seems true to me.
And there's something I read, I'll try to, just recently, that there's supposed to have been a secret report that Netanyahu did that they've now admitted that they are Khazars and are going to their focus now is on Ukraine. Have you
really?
Seen that?
Yes. That was interesting.
And I thought I have always theorized that they stole the original Malaysian plane MH370, and what they were going to do is they were going to use that as a false flag to implement Iran, you know. And then it was on the news all the time, remember, and it sort of faded away. And I, up until that MH17, I would think every week or two, well, when are they going to use that plane? And then they used MH17, and they used another Malaysian plane. Of course, they hate Malaysia. And then they redirected their focus towards Ukraine and Russia. And I was wondering whether, you know, that could be reflect that they're refocusing their effort not on expansion in the Middle East, which they would want to attack Iran, but if they're going to refocus on expanding or back into Central Asia or European area, then they just decided, well, we're going to do a false flag in Ukraine and Russia instead. So, yeah, there's all kinds of stuff going on behind the scenes. But
yeah, interesting. We're going to be covering the flight. I'm going to have Matthias Chang on tomorrow from Malaysia at 8 a.m.
That ought to be really good. So.
Yeah.
So, okay. Well, yeah, I sent you that link, and I hope you enjoy that.
Okay. Well, thank you so much for calling in, Kent. I always appreciate hearing from you.
Well, thanks, Diana.
Bye-bye. Okay. If you would like to call into the program, feel free. That number is 646-787-1915. Okay. I did get that link, and yeah, okay. It's very interesting, the things that are going on in Russia also, and Ukraine. And Ukraine has always been a very significant area of focus during World War II and before World War II. And it's also of note that a lot of Germans lived there. We have another caller. Why don't we take another call? 30. Whoops, I guess not. Okay, he dropped. Okay, we don't have another call. But if you do decide to call in and stay on, it's 646-787-1915. All righty. What do you think about the Khazarian theory? I don't think it's a theory. I think it's pretty accurate.
I haven't looked too much into it, to be honest, but I'll tell you the official biblical version of the Jewish race is not true. It seems like the story about the Egyptian captivity, the entire thing is just totally not true, that that there wasn't this huge community there that was enslaved, as you know, by the Pharaoh and such. So I think something like what you're talking about seems much more likely.
Exactly. All righty. Let's see if there's any questions here in the chat room. Nope. All righty. So when do you plan on starting that film? What kinds of things are you gathering? What can we do to help?
Okay. Well, I'm working with a small team of some multimedia guys. If you yourself are good with 3D graphics software or Photoshop or any sort of, if you're an image maker, multimedia guy or girl, please contact us. We need people to join our team. So our next step when we get the actual sort of virtual sets made in the 3D program is we're going to need to film. So we're looking right now. We need some people to actually act in this video, and we're sort of looking for someone to serve as a tour guide through this museum, sort of like a host. And specifically, we're trying to find someone, preferably, we're trying to use some of the sort of tricks the other side uses to sort of make our video more approachable. So we're looking for like a how can I say this, an attractive, about, you know, younger 20s female to be a welcoming host to sort of explain people this sort of scary information in a way that is sort of welcoming and inviting. So our goal is we're going to basically... a lot of our videos are made by us angry white males, we're trying to sort of make something that the masses will find less scary because, you know, the masses are feminine. So we're looking to try to cast people for the video. If you'd like to be in the video yourself, if you want to be a person like part of this tour group that we'll be going through and asking questions, let me know. I think we'll be filming possibly in the eastern part of America, hopefully in about 2 months. So we're trying to make like an actual professional production. We're going to need some additional financial support because we want to get some quality cameras, quality lighting equipment, quality sound equipment. We need more computing power to do a lot of the 3D rendering that needs to be done. So if you liked our last video, which is, it's really the only 1080p high definition revisionist video. It's the only one full length. We're trying to bring a lot of professional quality into our presentations. If you like what we've been doing, we just want to do it better, and we need your support. So please go to our website and help if you can. If you can't help financially and you have skills, multimedia skills, please contact us, and we're trying to get this important project out there.
Yeah, it's very interesting. I was in the museum in Jerusalem when I was there in 1999, and you mentioned tour guides.
Yad Vashem?
Yes, I was there. Huh. And noticeably, there weren't any.
Huh.
When we first entered the museum, there's a wall, it's glassed in, and there's just a lot of names, rotating names, just a moving picture of just names, names, that's it. And it was dark. It was very cathedral-like. It was very ominous. Yeah. It was, you felt like you were walking into a mausoleum, which is very, very significant because they appeal to your emotions. And so probably what you would want to do is do just something quite the opposite of that.
Yes.
To be light. See, uh-huh. It was dark. The thing that I remember is that it was dark. The uh-huh. only thing that had any light on it at all was what they wanted to focus on.
Uh-huh.
They had glass cases with the canister and with the gold stars and that kind of thing. But they really didn't have, it was mainly just an emotion that they were attempting to create. No, go ahead.
Well, it's a death cult, so they use a lot of this dark imagery, this black. If you go to the Holocaust Museum website, it's all black.
It is all black.
It's a death cult, and one of the ways they get to silence dissent is for you to think that you have to be so reverent towards these people.
Exactly.
But we should be mocking a lot of their dopey stories, like Irene Zisblatt and even Elie Wiesel. So there are laws specifically against, quote, making light of. But we should be making comedy videos. This is a way that really affects people. It is an emotion, and it's certainly an emotion the other side would never want people to experience. I mean, imagine a theater full of people laughing at, you know, Spielberg's Oscar-winning documentary in the theater because it's basically just a bunch of BS that these, quote, survivors are saying and even creating props to support their stories. So,
right.
Yes, I mean, there's a way to do it that respects the sort of 1 million, what Jürgen Graf claims is approximately 1 million that died as a result of the Allied bombing campaign, the starvation, the mistreatment, even the murder of some. Yeah, most of these promoters need to be mocked in a comedic fashion. So,
okay,
yeah.
Here's an idea. It's from the chat room. And this person said, why not have, this is awful, as we're thinking about, why not have the smell of baking bread throughout the museum?
Yeah.
And have ovens.
At the end there.
And have loaves of bread coming out of the ovens. I mean,
this is used as a joke. Well, I mean, honestly, one of the ways I first sort of came into this theory, or not theory, but movement, I used to actually listen to Howard Stern. I grew up in New Jersey. He was very popular at the time. And I sort of like edgy comedy. I like, especially if it's not politically correct. So I would listen to his show, and he had another Jewish comedian on, Gilbert Gottfried. And he has very sort of odd voice, sort of grating voice, but I'm sure you've heard of him. And
mm-hmm.
he would tell jokes, like about Auschwitz and baking ovens and, you know, things like that, that they would laugh at. And, you know, I didn't think it was really funny at the time. But then it would make me examine the story, you know, because we are told that they were put into the ovens alive in some
mm-hmm.
cases.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, there's a joke about pizza ovens and, you know, I think he told something like that. So, yeah, comedy is a whole field we haven't really gotten into. But, yes, I mean, if you look at the design of the website, HolocaustHoaxMuseum.com, we want to make it like the opposite of the other side.
Well,
with
it's
their
so
darkness
light.
And
it's so light. That's what I love about it. I'm sorry to interrupt, but it is so light. It's airy. It's clean. It's really nice. It's very
yeah,
nice.
We want to shine a light on the story. We don't want people afraid. We want them to take a look at what we have to say, that we aren't evil people, that we, you know, many of us are motivated most of the people I know in this movement have given up almost everything, especially,
Well, you've been in jail. Guillermo Rudolph has been in jail. A lot of people have been in jail. Just
yeah,
because they've spoken out.
Yeah, so then, you know, I've read some other articles, and, you know, the way we're going to convince people, I think we have to really stop a lot of the name-calling and...
Oh, absolutely, yes.
I've done it myself, of course. We're very angry and upset about this monstrous hoax, but we're going to have to look at the people that we're trying to reach as what they are. They're brainwashed people.
Sure.
You know, maybe even people in our own family. We love them, and we don't think they're stupid. They just...
They're just educated by the system.
Yeah, they've been watching TV all their life. They've been too busy working, trying to pay the bills. They watch TV. You know, they're maybe of an older generation or a younger generation that has different interests, different focuses. But we have to try to make it approachable to them and interesting to them. And
sure.
You know, we have to not make our websites or our imagery look scary. It should look like a magazine article that you would read normally. So I would suggest to people We have the facts on our side. Try, if you're going to contact people, you're trying to change minds. No one is going to change their mind if you call them stupid, liars, all of this. So I think this is
it's all in the presentation.
Yes, in the presentation. Exactly, and that's why the other side has won. They have better publicists. They study human behavior. They know how to convince people. They know how to manipulate people.
Sure.
So we have the truth on our side. So let's try to reach out to people in an understanding way. Try to understand when you were on the other side, and what would you do if someone was trying to convince you of the revisionist method? You know, for say, you know, after 9/11, when you were a neoconservative listening to these guys, you've got to be understanding, caring, sympathetic. You've got to be, you know, you've got to...
Well, I think one of the things that we could do in a museum to show some sort of, to gain some sympathy maybe, mm-hmm. is to show some of the images of the German camps, the Rhine-Meadow camps with the starving Germans,
mm-hmm.
That where they had no barracks, no infirmary, no hospital, mm-hmm. no kitchen, no latrines, nothing.
No escape.
Yeah. I think do a comparison between maybe show a kitchen, a working kitchen that was perhaps at Auschwitz, and maybe have images of the band at Auschwitz, or the library, some of the things, the facilities that were attainable for the prisoners there. I mean, you mm-hmm. even had a house of prostitution there.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's something important that a lot of people take for granted, because, you know, it's a sensitive subject, you know, sex and all this. Think about horrific the American prison system is. We know all these stories about inmate rape, and, you know, a lot of American movies make jokes about this, how men are raped by each other in prison. Well, these evil Nazis had a solution to this that sounds pretty progressive to me. They had legal brothels on site at these camps to reward the Gentiles, laborers, forced laborers, prisoners, etc.
Sure.
So the horrific rape rates that America celebrates, it seems today, that did not occur in the so-called evil Nazi camps.
Sure. And then you could also show the money
that
that the workers in the camps actually had jobs. They wouldn't have exterminated people. They were counting on them to work in the factories that were nearby, at least at Auschwitz, because most of the Germans from a very young age, 16 and up, were fighting a war that they didn't want, that they didn't uh-huh. ask for, that they didn't start. And so these people in the camps were given money that they could spend at the commissary in all of these places, or to, you know, they had a post office. If you showed some of those things.
Yeah, so if anyone has more ideas on what we should show in the museum, I mean, we're going to have a display of the Buchenwald table that was used by American psychological warfare units to trick the nearby residents of the city of the village of Weimar, with the shrunken human heads on it and the lampshade made out of human skin. We have a 3D representation of the San Quentin gas chamber to show people all of the various specific mechanisms that are required both to kill the inmate, which is restrained in the chair, and protect the people on the outside that are not present in the, you know, concrete rooms with holes alleged cut in the ceilings. We're going to be showing how the 6 million figures started well before the war. We're going to honor, like I said, the legends and the revisionist movement, the heretics who are the real inspiration to a lot of freedom fighters. And we're going to try to just teach people about the delousing process, what it really was, what Zyklon B really was, how there were similar delousing facilities in places such as Ellis Island and the Mexican-American border. So we're just trying to do the big things. We're trying to, you know, we're going to show pictures of the babies in the camps such as Auschwitz and Dachau. Of course, you know, the very basic person and child is taught that these babies were thrown into flaming pits of fire at the entrance of Auschwitz. So we're showing that babies were in these camps perfectly healthy. There was no extermination program. Almost a lot of these claims, from the Hollywood propaganda to the actual witnesses against John Demjanjuk, are just absolute liars. And we have to push forward, and we have to stop being the victim of these people and their campaign against us and their desire to imprison us and things. And they should be the ones on trial. They should be defending their actions. So that's what I urge, is that to try to do what you can. I think one day we will get a massive revision in the death toll of these camps. It's just not going to withstand the information age.
Sure, I think that the Red Cross has very wonderful conclusions. They have very good statistics on the camps. The Germans kept very good records. And they kept records of everything that they did. And those became available in early, 1991. I mean, a lot of people have a lot of resources. I think it would also be good to show the list of Hollywood directors, film directors, and show pictures of them actually, you know, directing these people in these films. And there's a lot of films that they created, and a lot of people worked in it. In fact, somebody referred to Hollywood. The Holocaust is Hollywood at its absolute best. And
yes.
They knew that. I mean, that's what they went over there to film it. They were there before the end of the war. Billy Wilder was there before the end of the war, and ready to film.
Well, yeah, I mean, there's a book called Five Came Back.
Yes, yes.
It's about George Stevens and John Ford. You said Billy Wilder. And in Britain, it was Alfred Hitchcock.
Yeah.
They had these crew of fictional filmmakers that were used to create propaganda. Well, this book writes that many of the scenes they filmed, battle scenes, were shot on sound stages in Hollywood or in Florida,
exactly.
or in other places. And even the, audiences at the time thought this movie, Pearl Harbor, the attack on Pearl Harbor, I believe it was called, they believed it showed the actual battle footage of, attack footage, but this was actually shot with models and on a set and things. When you look at it more closely, and people like Charles Kraft and many other revisionists have pointed this out, Hollywood at Dachau, Hollywood filmmakers, psychological warfare units created the so-called gas chamber disguised as a shower room we see there today. So that is a movie set. It's not a guest chamber.
So you could have a movie set. You could have a movie set with all the cameras and the lights, you know, just an image, and have all of these guys maybe even working together, have them all hugging each other, you know, whatever. I mean, there's so many things that you could do with that. Now, I looked up the guy that wrote Five Came Back. I was thinking, oh, he'd be a great guest, but he died. He's dead.
Really?
Yeah.
It just came out one or two years.
Which was kind of surprising to me. I thought, oh, great, I'll get this guy on my radio program. But when I looked him up, he passed away.
Wow.
So I'm thinking, very interesting that they would release his book after he had died.
Well, it's a decent book, but he doesn't really focus on the fact that these units were given, like, they were gods within the war. They could do whatever they want. They could move wherever they want, and, you know, even Patton couldn't tell them what to do.
Yes.
Eisenhower gave them this sort of godlike power. So, unfortunately, that author doesn't point out that, the U.S. Army Signal Corps was involved with also faking a lot of this.
Sure.
Well, first of all, the gas chamber, and also some of this footage was staged. You know, they would stack the bodies close to somewhere they wanted people to look, and they would pose the, you know, diseased inmates in specific positions because they had the eye for this. They're the Hollywood filmmakers. They're trying to show you the emotions.
Yes, and they created so-called documentaries. I cover all this in my last book. I tell you how they did it, who was in charge, what they did, who was, basically the whole...
Oh, I gotta look at that. I've gotta look at that. The U.S. Signal Corps. They were big hoaxers.
Indeed. Go ahead.
Sorry. On that, I actually. Speaking of that, there's something I'm going to release probably within a few weeks. I've been working on it, but there is an alleged torture chamber that was found near the Eiffel Tower after the liberation of Paris, and the U.S. Holocaust Museum claims, you know, there's video of people next to this wall, and this wall has cement handprint markings in, like, and it's just a wall full of cement handprints. And they claim that these were victims that were trying to claw their way out of a gas chamber. And this is what the Holocaust Museum writes. It's what they say. It's the first, I believe when you look up gas chamber on their site, the first thing that comes up. And it's just absolutely absurd. This is it's another movie set. Just
of
like
course.
The Dachau.
Yes.
So, you know, so I think people like Charles Kraft are right that a lot of the scholars within the revisionist movement sort of, they give it too much credit. It exists on film, and film is what really made people believe. And we believe film can also make people question and come to the realization that we've been had, our grandparents were lied to, and our parents were lied to, and we were told this at my generation was told this at a very early age, that we would never question it.
Sure.
So, what's that?
Yep. Yeah. Yeah, that's, it's very good that you're doing this. It's incredibly good. And I think brainstorming about what to include and how to include it and what is going to appeal to people, and certainly they've had an open field. They have had carte blanche as far as having all of the attention, and they started early. I mean, they started before the war was even over, propagandizing this.
Mm-hmm.
And so you have to do what you can to counter this and do mm-hmm. it better. And they really although they've done a good job. Hollywood has done a good job because they have all the equipment and everything. But you have
yeah.
the truth. You have
yes,
the truth.
Yes, if you look at specifically the last days of the Big Lie and the Treblinka archaeology hoax, they're both debunking documentaries, and it really makes you think about the techniques and the manipulation that they use, and that's all that they do.
Sure.
You know, if I were to shot on the budget I have, something like the stuff that they film, it would be absolutely laughed at. But you know, we can take their own footage and debunk it and show people how they're manipulating. For instance, at Treblinka, you know, they have this documentary called Treblinka, Inside Hitler's Secret Death Camp. And the cinematography of this was also on the Smithsonian Channel. It's just made to look like a horror movie or even like a zombie movie. It's so desaturated and the colors are so darkened that that's the only picture millions of people have of these places. But, you know, when you actually go there and you film it without color correction and you sort of smell the air, you see what the people would have seen, you actually see some aspects of it that don't have anything to do with death at all, but are meant to support life. Like you said, the bakery, there's a swimming pool, kitchen,
yes,
latrines in
yes.
Treblinka 1. A different picture comes to your mind. So we
and the
just
soccer
try to,
fields, they were playing,
yeah.
had sports. If people were so weakened and in such poor condition, they
right.
wouldn't have been able to play sports. They
exactly.
only got weakened at the end of the war with all of the Allied bombing. But show
right.
have pictures of them playing sports. I mean, there were
yeah.
a lot of fat prisoners and, you know, good. They were muscular. They were working. They
well,
they
I mean,
got better food than the civilians.
Irene Zisblatt is shown from a picture at Liberation, and she claims her... And she obviously looks pretty chubby and sort of fat and healthy, but her excuse is that she's bloated from lack of proper nutrition or something. Yeah, all the diamonds maybe. But,
all the diamond dust that settled in her intestines.
Yeah, so wait a minute. Everyone wasn't deliberately starved. They didn't deliberately try to exterminate these people, which is why so many are alive. They could have killed Irene Zisblatt at any time they had their hands on her. At every step of the way, they fed, clothed, and provided medical care for her.
Right.
And she was a unskilled child, female child. How much really did she contribute? And there's many examples of this. You know, for the total beginner, I'm sure your listeners know that Anne Frank survived Auschwitz. She was transited through to Bergen-Belsen, where she died of typhus. Unfortunately, at the end of the war, you know, when many people were dying of these diseases and, you know, the terrible conditions that were the result of Germany collapsing, the infrastructure collapsing, it being deliberately demolished by the Allies, the confusion, the destruction of the country. They're losing the war.
Right.
So they use these images that were mostly filmed in the Western camps, the camps that were liberated by the Western Allies, and they claim that this proves that they were deliberately exterminated throughout the many years that these camps operated and were used to evacuate and utilize these people for forced labor.
Exactly. What an amazing period of time that was. And of course, we do know that World War One, World War Two were really the same revolution. It was a worldwide revolution, and with a short period of time in between. It was just an awful time, an awful, awful time. And I think we're pretty lucky in America that we have not experienced the war and the bombs dropping and all of the things that so many other countries are experiencing right now, like in Gaza, or that the Germans experienced. And it's just heartbreaking to think of the people that perished, that were innocent, totally innocent. And as you said earlier, they blame Germany, not just the leaders. Uh-huh. It seems like the entire German population is at fault. They've demonized all Germans, all German things, and all Germans.
Well, I think it's all Gentiles. I mean, I grew up in America. My grandfather served in the United States Army. I had nothing to do with this so-called Holocaust, but, you know, I'm made to feel guilt for this. It's, you know, as if I had something to do with this or that I should be punished because I'm a white male. It's spread to not only Germany is the victim of this propaganda. Of course, I think all Gentiles are, and we see specifically the Palestinians.
Mm-hmm. Indeed. It's terrible. It's absolutely terrible. And we do need to learn history, because I've always stated that history is prologue. And they never change their tactics at all. If you start with the Civil War, which I've done, and move forward, they never, ever change their tactics. And they write history. The victors write the history. But it's imperative that we know what accurate history is, and particularly when it concerns warfare.
Yeah, the victors are the better killers, and they write history. So think about that. Think about American hypocrisy, you know, and I think as I was talking to the other caller, of course, things aren't always black and white, especially in warfare, but you have to demonize the other side to get people to kill them. So this is why this demonization stuff happens and why it's still happening. We're doing our part to try to expose this. Our videos have been seen more than 500,000 times and rising. So we're trying to, if you please can visit our website, holocausthoaxmuseum.com. We're still really working on it. We don't have much content. Watch the video, the Treblinka Archaeology Hoax. It was recently pulled from YouTube, but you can download it in HD. Just put it wherever you want. It is covered under fair use, no matter what is said about it. And if you can support us financially, we can really put the money to good use. We're trying to make a really good tutorial for beginners to the controversy. So thank you very much for having me on your show, Deanna.
Well, thank you so much, Eric, for all the work that you've done and all the work that we anticipate that you will be doing. Thank you very much. Thank you so much, listeners, and we'll talk to you tomorrow, actually. Take care. Bye-bye.